You're listening to The Cult, presented by Hybrid Marketing Co. In each episode, we explore the dynamics of this rapidly growing sector with our host, Jen Lamboy, along with expert guests. She'll delve into the complex interplay between cannabis business, culture, and marketing, equipping you with insights to amplify business outcomes in this rapidly evolving space. Now, let's start the show.
So first off, thank you for joining us on this conversation about native e-com and AI. I'm really excited for all of you to hear what these folks are about to educate you on. Please know that this is a really new arena for most. So at the end, we'll close just a little bit of housekeeping. We'll do questions at the end, maybe 10 or so minutes. I know Denise has a plane to catch at 5 o'clock, so if the conversation spills a little bit longer, meet us on the landing and we can continue there. I'll also say before I introduce, go ahead and grab your phone or your computer, get on LinkedIn, and please follow each of these folks. They have a lot to offer in this space. They're driving the cannabis industry, so we love to also build networks and connect really to drive this industry in the right direction. So we'll each run through a quick intro. Please say who you are and how you're relevant to this space. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Cool. Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremy Johnson. I currently am the business development manager at Dispense. I work a lot with our partners, POS, Ancillary, Springbig, Alpine IQ, things like that. But my background originally is in e-commerce. I spent probably close to 10 years building out Magento websites for everything from toy stores to auto parts stores. And then simultaneously, I was a caregiver here in Michigan. And in 2018, when we went recreational, I was able to kind of combine both my professional experience with my hobby of being a caregiver in cannabis. Helped open some of the first stores in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and eventually transitioned to leading digital plus overall marketing there. Big focus on e-commerce. You know, a lot of us here in Michigan, we opened in 2019 and had to rely on e-commerce to stay afloat in early 2020. And then after that, I went to 315 and led digital there for about 6 months before it was purchased by SkyMint. And that eventually led me to Dispense, where I am now. While I was at 315, I saw the need for a native e-commerce platform. Never got to implement it because of the merger, but the amount of resources that it took to do that just wasn't accessible to most of the companies out there. And so that's why I joined Dispense, to help build a out-of-the-box solution that you could get up and running for, you know, just as quickly and just as cheaply as one of the iframe solutions out there.
Hi, everyone. I'm Denise Dinardi, and I'm the Chief Sales Officer at Native Roots. Based in Colorado, we have soon-to-be 21 stores. This has been an interesting panel to be on because I am a veteran retailer, worked for Fortune 100 companies in wellness and health and beauty. I've been in cannabis for 5 years, and for those of you in retail, you have to constantly evolve. So how AI can play a part in the retail evolution is critical to what I feel is our success, and I think success of the industry. So that's a little bit about me, and hopefully you'll all be able to learn something out of the panel today. I have a high curiosity factor and love to learn, so that also has lent itself well to this panel.
I am Joey Gindy. I am the CEO and partner of Ajoya. I've been in the cannabis space since 2009, so pre-enforcement division in Colorado, and oversee our two retail operations there now. Also did cultivation for a little over a decade before we shut that down just to focus solely on retail. I got on this panel because this year, I grew a passion for AI and learning how to integrate it into my business. And I started Cannabis Marketing AI, which currently what I do is I build virtual team members to fill roles in people's businesses. And not to replace people, but to really empower staff on how to use AI so that they can be more productive, be more efficient in their operations, and really level up their skill set significantly. So grew a passion for it. Now I help businesses build virtual team members as well inside of their operations, kind of using Ajoy as a case study for that, and had an opportunity to speak here. So I'm really excited to talk with you guys about what I've learned about AI, and hopefully you get some good stuff from it.
Thank you. And I'm Jenny Lamboy. I'm the Director of Strategy for Hybrid Marketing Co. We are based in Denver, Colorado. There's about 20 of us on our internal team. What we do is we focus on business outcomes. So sure, we do marketing. We do everything under the umbrella. But really what we're trying to do is build back to business outcomes. We want to know, what is your sales plan? What is your platform? What does your marketing and sales tech stack look like? And so part of that conversation, you know, especially as we cover really the spectrum here, we're talking about retail, we're talking about software platforms and solutions, we're talking about operations as well, but I also want to get a sense of who in the audience is leveraging AI today in your cannabis business. Who? There you go, it's waiting for you. Who maybe doesn't know whether or not you're leveraging AI? Okay, so I took a little survey on LinkedIn. Granted, it was a fairly small sample set, but 70% of those who responded to the poll know that they're using AI. 14% weren't quite sure. 14%, a little bit over, said they weren't. So what I want to talk about too, especially with y'all, is how are you leveraging it within your own organizations? And native ecom. Not exactly a perfect marriage, but go ahead, Jeremy.
Okay, so as a business for Dispense, we don't really utilize AI that much. Every now and then we'll use it to help with some marketing functions, specifically like if we are targeting multiple cities. That's more of a dispensary type of scenario as well. We really don't, but we do use it every day when we're working with our dispensary partners, and even our ancillary partners. Again, you know, whether it's on the POS side, like sorting through data and using AI to help find trends quicker, or if we're doing it with like a Alpine IQ where they're using AI to help create content based on users' preferences. So, you know, for me in my daily job, I don't use it a ton, but when I'm working with our dispensary partners, we use it every day across all the different tools. So limited, but getting more and more into it as we go down the path here.
So I guess from our perspective, we use it to really look at consumer buying preferences, to build on suggestive selling. So really using AI to see what's going into the basket, how can we cross-sell and add more items, especially with our online shoppers. And then from an operational standpoint, this is where we're just testing it out right now, is I always say we have a problem that we need to fix, and ours would be inventory management, and we have a distribution center, so distributing and allocating products effectively to our stores, and also doing bottom-up demand planning. So we're actually testing, I'm a big test and learn, I don't jump right in, but we're actually testing a few models right now for inventory management. And I think what opportunity that has provided, which Joey also mentioned, is I firmly believe in both reskilling and upskilling our employees. So this is actually, they're gaining a skill set by using AI, and we also are able to effectively manage our labor because we can't effectively keep hiring a lot of people to fill some of these roles. But AI really adds it's a great tool for us to use for inventory management. I never thought I would say that, because AI, as I've always known it, is ChatGPT and virtual bud tenders and all that, and there are so many ways to look at it, especially as most companies have a path to profitability. The use of AI, I think, is growing, and for us, it's been very effective in how we've been exploring its uses.
So, you know, one of my first introductions to AI was learning how to, you know, I said it when I introduced myself, like how to build virtual team members to support people in their roles inside of the business, you know. And I think I've done it for several different roles. I think the most prominent one that I use it for right now is in marketing. Now these virtual team members, like, imagine having an employee that like reads all about your brand and your core messages and your values and like understands your ethos and all of that. So when I build these team members, you know, I can build them in a way that they really understand your brand. They really understand like Ajoy and what we're about and what our values are. And because it has that knowledge, it can then, you know, if we're talking about creating email sequences to nurture our customers to launch a new product, you know, and to be able to write an email series and send it out over the course of, you know, a week or 2 weeks or 5 weeks, whatever it is, you know, we leverage AI to write all of that copy. And even before that, really like from the ideation stage, you know, I think sometimes, you know, marketing, you hit that like, you know, that writer's block and you're trying to think about like ideas and what should I do? Should I, you know, not even from a content, just a content standpoint, but even like what type of marketing do I want to put out? Is it a blog? Is it a white paper? Is it, you know, a webinar? Is it an email series? Like, what is it? And it's amazing how, you know, when you're working with AI that's really trained on your business and it understands your audience, it can really come up with really creative ways to connect with the consumer. And so I have found it invaluable when it comes to marketing. You know, I think the next step for me is like training my team on how to leverage it themselves and kind of turning that over to them so they can start using it. So marketing's been a big one. And then I think the one area, other area I mentioned, I mean, there's several operational areas too, but I think the one most notable one for me is HR. You know, like my staff, and if anyone has a retail store or even any business, I guess, in cannabis, like there's constant things that come up with employees, you know, performance related things or conflicts between people. And so we're always, you know, they're always calling the HR manager like, hey, I'm dealing with this, like this happened. And sometimes it's like outlandish and sometimes it's like little things. And saw an opportunity to leverage AI for store managers or operations managers to first consult with AI, you know, like, hey, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what happened. Like, how do I resolve this? And leveraging it to like write the incident report and then write the performance plan for that staff member. And I never suggest just taking that and running with it. I do suggest take that, go to your HR guy and say, hey, look at what I created. Like, how does this work? And so far my experience is they're like, that's good. Like, run with that. And, you know, if there is any edits, it's just a couple little tweaks, but that alone can save you, you know, hours of talking to an HR person and hundreds of dollars, you know, in contract labor to deal with that situation. So just a couple areas that have worked.
We've had a couple meetings before we were on the panel just to kind of talk through what is the best way that we can offer you all value in this conversation too. And something that you mentioned, Joey, was around having and creating content that is still on brand and consistent. So if you're talking about email sequences, social posts, Jeremy, you talked a little bit about leveraging around product descriptions, even really having that consistency with the brand also can kind of help in some efficiencies as well.
Yeah, I think that's important. Like, you know, there's gonna be turnover too in your business and there's gonna be different people filling roles. And I think what is really cool with AI is when you have AI that understands your business and can speak in your brand voice and understand your core values, it's like different people can fill that role and use this tool that can ensure that all the content being produced is on brand. And so it does create that consistency.
Sure. Specific to, and I want to just pivot slightly over to native e-com just for a moment so we can kind of see what that intersection of really investing in technology, the meaning of that. So what I love about Native Roots is that you all invest in technology. It's a huge part of growth within your business. Cannabis companies now, of course, margins are small. The industry is volatile, but it can be a tool for moving forward, growing, scaling. We're working with, soon to be working with Joey soon, as far as just even growing our own organization around even HR. So we know that we've got to be able to scale up when this happens, and then this often happens, and then there's a little bit of flattening out within the industry as well. But I do want to pivot over to native e-com. Jeremy, can you explain really kind of more so the value of what that sort of technology looks like and what it does for the consumer, and then we'll pivot into a conversation around benefiting.
Definitely, yeah. So first off, I want to go back to the BDSA keynote earlier. If you guys didn't see, that was one of the things that they highlighted, was that in every market that they surveyed, one of the first things people do when they're looking at dispensaries is they look at the online menus. And it varies by region. There's another report put out recently, and then on my own side, I've taken some time to try to look at it from a market level perspective, and my estimates is that about 30% of all cannabis sales are initiated online, or placed online rather. They might not be paying online, but they're placing the order online. So to put that in perspective, there's about $30 billion of sales, cannabis retail sales in the U.S. this year. That, if 30%, that would mean about $9 billion was placed online. That's at the minimum. I think it's actually probably closer to like 35%. And again, it varies per market. Where like in Colorado, they're really just picking up on online sales. In places like New Jersey, it's a majority of online sales. So it really depends market-wise, but then when we're talking about native e-commerce, we're talking about the difference between how your menu is displayed on your website. So most menus at this point are iframe menus, and you're basically copying, you guys are probably all familiar with this, but you're copying and pasting code into your website, and you're displaying content from another website on your website. Whether that's a Dutchie or a Weedmaps or an iHeartJane, that's an iframe. So the reason why this is important is because that content is actually coming from another domain. It's not the shopping experience you get anywhere else with e-commerce. Any mainstream industry, you're using a Shopify, you're using a WooCommerce, you're using a BigCommerce, and all the content is a part of your website. Google looks at it as a part of your website. All of the analytic platforms look at it as a part of your website. So that's the big difference. And that when you use native e-commerce over something like an iframe, you get access to all these analytics that you wouldn't otherwise have. And you control the data too. You can see, you can get a clear picture of the user journey. You can really get an idea instead of just seeing, oh, I've got 100 abandoned carts. You can see I've got 100 abandoned carts and 5% of them have Jeter pre-rolls in them, or 10% of them have Wana gummies in them. So then you can get really detailed, and this is kind of where AI comes in, but you can get really detailed with your marketing at that point where you can say, hey, I'm going to only look at people that have looked at Wana gummy products, added it to their cart, and then I want to send a 5% coupon to them. Or you can use AI to say, what is the percent that each person should get? So that's kind of the difference, and I try to tie it a little bit into how we're going to talk about AI here, but that's the high-level overview.
And really also what it does is it puts us into a shopping experience that folks are already used to. So Denise, talk to us a little bit about the value of suggestive selling and really what native e-com, and also as we're talking about AI, really what that does for the consumer.
Yeah, I can. It's interesting where you say 35%. So in Colorado, 11% of our customers shop online, and it's growing. So that's actually pretty strong. And the value of suggestive selling is really, we know now that consumers, majority of them, will even do all of their research online, which again, AI plays a big part in product descriptions, education, et cetera. But there is always something, we all shop, there's always something that you want to buy that you don't know about. So based on consumers' purchasing patterns, you can add on or suggestive sell. So no different than what we do in our stores. So I call our e-commerce site is Store 22, and it's actually the face of our company, but really what people see on our website is what they should experience in store. But it's no different than somebody coming in to buy flour, and we always offer papers or glass or something of the sort. It's the same thing that you need to recreate on your website as well. So how do you continue the value of add-on sale? I will say I love online sales because our average order value is almost triple with our online sales. And it's because retail's all about dwell time once you get them in the store. And we know different store formats lend themselves to dwell time. Some don't. We have different store formats. Our pawn shop model does not lend itself to dwell time. But, if you can increase that dwell time online, people are going to purchase more because they're going to learn more and they're going to see one more thing that they want to buy. So that's really critical when we talk about the e-com experiences. How long can you keep the person on the website exploring other products and learning more about not only the products but also your brand, because that creates loyalty. So those are really, items that we focus on. I think earlier today we talked about the demographics in Michigan also, how they over-index in female consumers. We look at age ranges also, and I think one of the conversations today also was know who your customer is. Don't try to be everything to everybody. So we really take the data from our online shopping as well to identify who our core customer is and really gear it towards that. And then we've got, we're able to track data on purchase patterns. We thankfully have a low abandonment rate. We do watch that very, very closely to find out. I think that's critical. That's probably the one of the most important things you said, is really look at your abandonment rate and what are people leaving behind. And we're able to figure out, sometimes it's the shopping experience online. It has nothing to do with the products. So to really, I go on our website every single day and look at, from a consumer perspective, what's working, what's not, what do we need to enhance in the web experience to attract more and more customers. So we try and marry the online experience with the in-store experience and the consumer journey as well, which is product recommendations all day long. And also education about new and emerging product types so people can learn about it. And when they come in the store, they have some sort of knowledge, and you take that, especially for the first-time shopper, you take a little bit of that fear away from them. So that's a little bit about, kind of our e-com experience and how we marry it with in-store and use data. One of the things I keep referring, Joey brought up something before also about like virtual bud tenders or virtual, the operational side of the business. And we have so much data coming at us all the time. And our head of IT was saying, we need a data analyst in every single department. And we started talking. We said, no, we need to utilize AI and really figure out what does that data mean. So what I've done now is challenged people on my team to say, instead of just sending reports, you need to analyze what is this data telling you and what are these reports telling you. And it's a great use of AI, and it's also a great learning experience for our employees as well.
Denise, building off what you said, one thing I want to bring up is a great example of AI influencing shoppers right now is on Google. If you Google, where do I get a Jeter pre-roll in Detroit? If you have the, if you're on mobile or if you're opted into like the AI experience on Google, you'll see the generative AI results, and it'll show you the stores that carry Jeter pre-rolls at. But if you're using an iframe menu, it won't show you even if you carry those results, because Google is not crawling that content and seeing it as part of your website. It's seeing it as part of whatever third party is hosting that content. So that's like a very concrete experience of where native e-commerce makes a difference in how customers are utilizing AI in their shopping experience.
I think that it's also an area where brands can get involved and really take more advantage. We're talking about product descriptions. If somebody's looking for Wana gummies and that doesn't pop up on an iframe menu, there's opportunities to really expand and better serve the customer. And I know brands are really entering that space as well, especially given the fact that they are a little bit silent in some ways on the consumer side. So if you're wanting to explore a little bit more on the AI side, what are some tips for jumping in? Joey. Joey jumped in full.
Test it. You know, I think the first thing I would tell anyone in this room to do is start using ChatGPT. I mean, there's a lot of AI tools out there and different language models, but I think right now, and I don't know that it'll always stay this way, but I think right now ChatGPT is kind of leading them. I think pay the $20 a month for ChatGPT Plus. Don't wait for other people to do case studies and things to tell you how to use it. Like, start downloading that and using it inside of your business now. You know, she was talking about data analyzation. Like, if you pay for GPT Plus and you use the data analyst on there, you can download reports from your point of sale, plug it into there, and ask it to analyze it and give you recommendations. And like, you could do that right now. You don't have to wait for that. And it's amazing what it's able to do. You know, and we're toying with this inside of our business right now, and I've got a team member. That's another thing. Like, if you run a business, you know, don't do it all. Like, you were talking about delegating to some of your team members to do some of this, empower them to take it on and start analyzing some of this data and ask them to come back with some recommendations. And definitely I've cross-referenced the math, and it's on point. You know, it wasn't a few months ago, like, I was like, you're off by a few cents, and I would tell it that, and it's like, oh, I'm sorry, let me reanalyze that. And then it like goes through the thing, and then it corrects it. But the last month or so, like, it's been on point with every report that we've told it to analyze. I would say that, and then finding someone that you can trust and learn from. And, you know, go on a Twitter and find some people that you can follow and keep up with what they're talking about. And also know, like, you're not behind the ball. Like, you're not late to the party. It's easy to think that you are, but this is rapidly developing. And if you listen to any quote-unquote experts in the field, they're the first ones to say, like, it's evolving so rapidly, like, we can't keep up. You know, just in the last 2 weeks, ChatGPT can now analyze images, right? Like, you can have a straight-up image, and it will analyze it and give you information. So it can analyze graphs. You can think about, like, from an e-commerce standpoint, taking a screenshot of your products and say, write me a description for all of these images. You know, and think about the efficiency that has for it to look at every single image, provided it has, like, you know, a solid image of the product, and then be able to write you descriptions for every single one with all the details that you want, just based off of uploading a screenshot. Like, it's profound what's possible there. So those would be my recommendations.
And I think, in addition to just jumping in, having somebody, maybe it's one person in your organization who jumps in and tests, leverages folks within the network. You know, we're all trying to build a stronger and greater community. And really, there's folks who are always a little bit ahead of us, and folks who are always a little bit or more even behind us, if you think about emerging markets as well. So I think there's value to, and of course, have someone within your organization who's unafraid to jump in and explore, and then also leverage the knowledge of folks who are dug in a little bit more. I think that's across the board, outside of the conversation around AI and native e-com. I want to talk a little bit about differentiation when it comes to our own cannabis organizations. How can AI kind of help us bump ahead of the curve? Anyone take it? And if there's not an answer, then I'll jump in.
I'll give you guys an example that I'm really excited about right now. Some of you may have seen Alpine IQ put out yesterday, I think it was, text to voice for messaging customers for retailers. So now you can type up a message, and you know, this is in response to the filtration we're seeing, not just in cannabis, but across all industries, right? So you can type in a message, and it will use AI to automatically turn that into a voice message, and then it'll send that to your consumers that are opted into your loyalty programs. The really cool part about this is they're also using AI to translate it into different languages. So if they know that, you know, this is a number with a Spanish-speaking person, or what a French-speaking person, whatever it happens to be, they can automatically translate from your text to voice in whatever language. This is something that they're rolling out as of yesterday. And it's, you know, it's stuff like this that, like, you can hop on the train easily because other people are making it accessible. It's going to be interesting to see how it is received by consumers and how effective it is. But when we're struggling to communicate with our customers every day because we're not allowed on Facebook, we're not allowed on Instagram, maybe you don't have your consumer's email address. If you don't, I still think email is the best way to do it, so you should probably get that email address. But if you don't have that, like, SMS is quickly becoming a thing of the past, and this is just the next evolution of it provided by AI. And the even cooler part about this, and you guys probably know this, if you look at your phones, is when you get a voicemail, it can go voice to text. So that whole voicemail can then be retranscribed into a text message, and they can just read it right there, which is super awesome. So the AI is going both ways there.
Well, you're talking about a channel that has historically worked really well in the retail space, SMS text. So, you know, even now, everything is changing, I would say, quickly, daily, weekly?
Very quickly, yeah. And it's, I mean, this is, like, that's, I think, to Joey's point, like, don't be afraid to get in there and try it. Like, these are brand new tools, but, like, get in there, use it, and, like, it's crazy. Like, you'll get the voicemail, and it'll say, like, this is from... I'm gonna shout out New Standard because I see you guys in the crowd. But, you know, it'll say, like, this is from New Standard, and then you can read the whole thing, and, you know, you can include deals in there. Like, I don't know. Get out there and try it. Just do it, because if you don't, somebody else will, and they'll have the advantage in the long run.
Denise, can you talk a little bit about inventory and supply chain management, leveraging something like AI to again, I don't want to say get ahead of the curve, but really enhance operations?
Yeah, so we're looking at it again. I mentioned that, you know, we're looking at bottom-up demand planning. So we launched a sales and operation planning initiative about 2 years ago. And I will say it's kind of been plodding along. So we have our supply, demand, and then our finance weighs in. And we're about 50% accurate, which is not great, but we're getting there. So we're starting to explore using AI to increase that accuracy. And we know where we are not succeeding. We opened up a distribution center last year, so it's been a little bit of a learning curve for our buyers, where they're buying for one distribution center and then allocating to our stores. And they're really not looking at the right data, so AI is helping us look at the right data, inventory turns, SKU productivity, et cetera. And then what we're doing also in tandem with that is pricing tests using AI. So it's always been a little bit daunting for us to do a price test on two different store types within the same market, we'll say Denver Metro, because a shopper can go, we have one store that's price sensitive, and down the street there's one where we can really charge anything. But I'm guessing when I'm saying that, so AI is actually validating that data. So will a consumer drive across town for a deal, or will we lose a customer because we're charging a different price in a different area? So those are two of the operational areas we're looking at. And then another piece, this is a little bit on the operational, but I'm gonna go into the people side. Culture is probably our biggest contributor as a company. That's really our point of differentiation, is the culture of our company, and we have learning roundtables. So we've all talked about just dive in and start testing it. AI, we're not doing this yet. We'll do it when we get back, because I thought about it sitting here. But AI is a great learning roundtable. And again, it empowers your employees, and retention is key, especially in our industry where turnover is high. So any of those opportunities you have to increase retention, give a learning opportunity to your employees, I mean, it pays for itself tenfold. I can say that, being in a high turnover industry for too many years to count. So,
well, and the barrier to entry is there a barrier to entry? No, not into cannabis. No, into leveraging some of these technologies. You can jump in. It's easy. You can fail, and nothing huge happens. Denise, when you're talking about using AI potentially to help make business decisions, Are there? Do you have any warnings around? Like, I'm sure you don't just, okay, let's see what a piece of technology has told us what to do. How do you, like, are you taking those conversations, again, roundtabling them, and how quickly are you making decisions based on some of those insights?
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty new to it, so we'll validate the data. No different than, you know, putting something into ChatGPT and seeing how accurate it is, et cetera. So we do validate and test everything as well. So not jump right in, because I think pretty much anybody who's written about AI, you hear just as many good things as you do bad things. So don't depend on it 100%. I think our marketing department did a test about somebody who did a copy and paste from an AI-generated text and used it as social media and didn't get any followers whatsoever. So really test and look for the results. Is there any kind of return that you're getting? So like I said, test and learn, and I always have a saying that has served me very well. If you're going to fail, fail fast. So don't stick with something just because you committed to it. It's okay to say it didn't work and move on to something else.
I will say, don't use AI to send cold outreach messages to anyone, because it sucks getting those messages. It's never relevant. They get my name wrong sometimes. So always test it before you send it out, and don't send mass messages using AI, because it's pretty lame. Don't do that.
You know, I'll add to that, because that is something you commonly hear, right? Like, how generic the messages are that people receive, and you can always tell that it's AI derived. But I think it's important to note that, like, data is king when it comes to AI. And if you're not giving it good data, you're gonna get bad output and generic output. You know, like, it was fed a data set, and so the output is based off of that data set. And if you're not giving it any new data, it's just gonna give you answers based on the data that it has. But an AI that's really trained on, let's say you're doing an outreach message to someone and you feed it data for that business, you know, I love Nancy, the owner of Wana, her posts about the generic cold emails that she gets. So I'll just use her as an example. But I'm like, if one of those salespeople fed it, like, took the time to say, AI, here's Wana, here's who they are, here's what they're about, here's their website, go analyze it. You know, like, here's all the data on them. Now write me an email to Nancy, you know, pitching this. It's gonna give you a much better result that maybe 90, 95, 99% there. So I'm with you, like, be careful, because no one wants to receive some generic, you know, crap email. And there are ways to have good output.
Yeah, I think that's the cool part about being in cannabis is, you know, like, we truly know almost everything about our consumers. Like, in most states, you have to scan their ID into the POS system. You know that you don't only know their 5-digit zip code, you know their 9-digit zip code. I can tell you what neighborhood they live in. And then on top of that, I have all the purchasing data. So you can, I can literally, when a new store opens up, I can literally show you where I lost customers by the neighborhood. Like, I didn't just lose customers in the city of Marquette, I lost customers in South Marquette. And I know what they purchase. And so that's where AI becomes really powerful, because we have all this data, and this is one of the few industries where we have this much data. It's also why I encourage people to push online shopping, because the more they shop online, the more information you get about their habits. You don't get quite as much insight when they shop in store. You still know what they buy, but you might not see their whole journey. You might not see the item that they looked at but didn't add to their cart, or they added it to their cart and then removed it afterwards. Where when they shop online, you see all of that. So that's the power of the data we have in our industry, and why AI can be so powerful with what we're doing.
It brings up an ethics question, I think, at least in my mind. What is the future? What does the future look like?
You know, on the topic of, like, suggestive selling and, like, looking at customer history, I think something that's going to be really exciting is, you know, right now, like, it already exists that there's suggested selling online. Like, you go to a cart, and before you exit that cart, it's saying, check out this product. And that's based off of patterns, like, people that purchased that product have also purchased these products. And what'll be really interesting with AI is, like, right now it's all generated by patterns, But in the future, and it could probably happen now, it just needs someone to build the software to be able to do it, maybe a good add-on for dispense. Making recommendations based off of customers' purchase history and knowledge about what the customer liked and didn't like. So imagine customers going on this card and going to check out, and then an AI engages them and saying, hey, how did you like the last Wana product that you got? Oh, I didn't like that. Like, that was, I didn't like this. Well, what did you like? Well, I didn't like this, this, and that. Okay, well, maybe you should try this product based off of what you just told me. And it's having a conversation. It's not just like, hey, try this, you know, but actually engaging with that person. So I think that's one of the most exciting things about, you know, having retail stores and wanting to merge that customer experience like you were talking about. Like, how do you create that customer experience online like you have in the store? And to take it a step further, that agent that's talking, that virtual agent that's talking to the consumer, is also trained on your brand values and your ethos and talking in your tone and voice and all of that. So it's truly giving that customer like an Ajoia experience or a Native Roots experience. So that's, we could talk about the rest of the time, like the future of AIs. It's exciting.
I don't know what it looks like, but I would tell people, like, don't do anything that you wouldn't want to happen to you. You know, like, this is people, and there are real regulations around people's data too, so like, follow the regulations, number one, but like, if it seems weird and creepy to you, maybe don't do it. That's the future.
that's a good general rule. We can turn it over to questions. I feel like we've covered a lot from brands, retail, dispenser, all of it. Do you all have questions? Yes, go for it. I think Adam's coming, or we're open to having you shout.
Thank you, guys. This has been great. I've learned so much. I'm a cranky boomer who has been selling my wares in an email ecosystem since the beginning of time. A year ago, I started using an email sequencing tool, and it changed my life. And I'm laughing so hard at myself right now because of what Joey said, that I'm using an AI toy. I did not know that, because I'm really cranky about AI and what I call fabricated content, because I'm sensitive and I smell it. And my email inbox, my own inbox, is now full of sequenced email solicitations. So it's kind of this cycle of I'm creating them and I'm now also receiving them. And Jeremy, you made me very happy when you said, don't stop sending emails. And my question is for you. And that is, I thought you were going to say the future of email is ending and over, but I heard you say, don't stop. I would just like to see a recreation of better emailing, I guess, is perhaps what makes me really cranky. Is that my question? I think my question is, thanks for reminding me that email is still the future, but I just wonder how.
Well, I'll say this, like, email's the least regulated of all the communication channels we have. I mean, other than your website, you know, like, the FCC is not paying attention to the emails you're sending, at least for the most part. Maybe if you're sending a bunch of crazy stuff, the FCC will step in, I don't know. But they're watching, you know, there's no carriers to watch your email content, like there is SMS, so... You know, I think people will try to say email has lower engagement than SMS, but like, that's not true these days. Like, I mean, my SMS inbox, I mean, Apple released a promotional tab for SMS because my inbox is so full. I literally have hundreds, if not thousands, of unread SMS in my inbox right now, because partially because I sign up for every dispensary's messaging system because I want to see it. But I don't open a lot of them, and I think a lot of consumers don't either. Where, you know, email at this point, it's funny because it didn't used to be this way, but email at this point is like, you sit down, you open it, and you read it, and the engagement is there. You can also track email way better than you can track SMS. You can track every image that people look at or click on. You can track every link. You can't do that with SMS. You can send one link. That's it. So you have way more opportunities for engagement. Email's not going anywhere for a long time.
Yeah, and I'll just add one thing. I mean, our biggest engagement is email. You know, 30 to 45% open rates on every email every time, and it's all AI generated as well. And it's all on brand and in our voice and all of that, but I'm pretty sure we get better rates with email than SMS, and I was surprised to see it, but it's true.
So this is for the whole panel, I guess. When is too much too much? So like a text message, an email, another text message, another email, all in the same order. So like say I go order online, and then like I'll get a text message confirming my order. When it's ready to be picked up, I'll get four emails saying the same thing, and then I'll also get all the promotional emails and everything else. So when does it become counterintuitive towards marketing to continue to shove this emails and SMS and all this like artificial intelligence down our consumers' throats when like obviously it's driven towards that like direction, but when is enough enough, and when do we focus more on like billboards or ads in magazines and balance the, I guess, technology side of things? Because I mean, you can press a pen and you can get a hit, but I mean, you're still packing a bowl and you're still rolling up a J, you know, to enjoy this product most of the time. So when does enough become enough, I guess?
Sure, I'll take this one. Well, two things. Touch points have increased. In order for your consumer, your customer, your prospect to hear you, from 7 touch points to 27, that's how many times it takes for someone to actually listen to you. What I will say, though, about that is the idea of segmenting that message is so important. So if you've got an email list that's everyone who's ever bought anything, and you continually hit them with emails, what you've done is you've started to train them to ignore you. If you look at purchase history, if you're a retail operation, you can look at, okay, I know that the folks who are buying flour are most likely not also the folks who are buying a ton of edibles, and you can start to segment in that way. You've already got folks who want to hear from you if you've captured an email. Make sure that your message is relevant and that it's something that they want to hear. They're happy to hear about whatever the deal is. They're happy to hear about, you know, hey, there's going to be a new campaign around 420. So keep that in mind. 27 touch points, that means it's not just one channel. It's got to be multiple channels. And what you're saying has to actually mean something.
I'll say too, you know, if you're getting an email and a text message about your order confirmation from a dispensary, either they haven't set up their messaging properly or the system they're using isn't working properly. You should be getting one message, and it should be based on your preference if you chose SMS or email. And typically, like a really good messaging system, I'm going to use Alpine again as an example, they have waterfall sequences. So you can say, hey, if this person prefers SMS but it doesn't get delivered, then send an email. You shouldn't be getting those multiple confirmations. There's something going on there, and so that's like definitely something for the dispensary to look into, and maybe for you to make them aware of. So you gotta keep it. Sometimes it's just user error on the dispensary's part. Sometimes they're not paying attention.
I also want to be respectful of time. I know you're catching a flight, Denise, and there's also a mixer following at 5 o'clock. If there are any more questions, meet us on the landing. Again, thank you. And thank you to MJ Impact, who is always so great at elevating the conversation in this industry. Thanks also for joining us. Hit us up on the landing, or we'll see you at the mixer afterward.
You've been listening to The Cult, the Cannabis Business Marketing and Culture Podcast, presented by Hybrid Marketing Co. Please visit hybridmarketingco.com for more resources or to connect with Jen and our team. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again soon.